this presentation is going to talk about mostly my experience in the field work which was carried out in spring this year in Inner Mongolia, eastern part of Inner Mongolia. And I chose it's an oral literature journal which is
Outer Mongol is basically people under Genghis Khan's his brother's rule since 13th century till now. No, the people, the same people actually, and they are in the eastern part of Inner Mongolia, and they were quite powerful and have been separate, basically separate from Genghis Khan's main, power, but always supportive to his main royal family power. But in the beginning of Qing, his Manchu rule, this is the last empire of China, they collaborated with Manchu people in the beginning of Manchu rule, and actually, they supported a lot to build this Manchu Empire. And they have been collaborating throughout Qing Dynasty. And the main means is through this marriage. A lot of Qing, because they were all the nobles, these rulers, noble family were given this noble title, different levels of noble titles, and the people were arranged into banner system, which is Manchu military system. So each banner had a prince from this family, noble family, and basically Manchu, this royal family, had this marriage relationship with all the prince of this banner. So many, about 300 Mongolian princesses married to Manchu court, and so many Manchu princesses married to all those princes. So because of that, this area is quite privileged and quite different, special, also culturally. So they preserved their land were preserved. Protected from Chinese migration throughout Qing Dynasty, so their culture was preserved. So there are, in terms of oral tradition, shamanism is preserved, and epics preserved, and but this one is special, again special genre of oral literature in this area, only in this area. This is not old one. This is a new world, but it's emerged in the beginning of 20th century. But it just succeeded the oral literary, epic, actually. Epic were, heroic epics were, became, how can I say, people did not understand any longer these heroic epics at that time, in the beginning of 20th century, because of this cultural, historical change. Then they pick up something at that time, this Chinese, Chinese classical literature mostly wrote about the fighting. And they used their instrument to tell these Chinese stories for some time. Then on one side it is similar, because it's always fighting, heroic. They laughed at. But culturally, and although also something not so acceptable or something like that, and then they started their own new heroic with such things as song. People say song, but actually they are telling stories. While telling the stories, they sing. They combine the singing and the narrative, also with the instrument. There is music and lyrics, also story and instrument involved. And mostly this part called the horch in Mongolian. This hor is a fiddle, actually. And horch is like this Uyghur chi. It means someone who play this instrument. Usually these people horch sang in the past these songs by telling the story. And ordinary people sing them, but very talented people without this instrument, they also sing. Then, it has, this is a little bit of a background. Then, the theme of the songs were, the main theme is heroic songs, heroes.
It's finally working.
Okay.
No, no, don't worry. We'll,
Then the main theme was heroes, but these heroes were not the heroes but new heroes who fought against Chinese land occupation. This Chinese warlord, actually. Warlord land occupation and land cultivation by military power. That happened in the end of the Qing Dynasty. When Qing Dynasty collapsed, Manchu rule collapsed over China, this Outer Mongolia immediately, the same year, 1911, declared their independence. But Inner Mongolia remained within China. They are so used to this, you know, the central government, and they have been so privileged and so rich, powerful, how can I say, peaceful. They are so remained there comfortably. Then, still in the 1930s, they were still wearing this Manchu, these costumes with these hats in Inner Mongolia, and in our photos, you know, in the museum. And then, suddenly, these Chinese warlords, different warlords, came to rule over this area. Then, these Chinese immigrants just swarmed into the area. Immediately, everything changed. They realized it is not, you know, really terrible thing happening, especially when this military power came in and cultivated the land. Many people lost their pasture land. Because in the past, also one thing, for Mongols, there is no private land ownership. Land are all common, so they move, you know, freely. Of course, in the Qing Dynasty, there is banner boundaries. They can move freely within the banner. And in the summer, they all go to one some pasture land. All banner. Banner is quite, you know, big. Banner is the administrative system. Then, when this Chinese warlords, this land occupation happened, this pasture land are lost, then no livelihood for Mongols. In this situation, fighting, this military, you know, uprising happened one after another to fight against this Chinese warlord. So these songs, this main theme of these songs are this heroic deeds of these national local heroes. So this first, then following this, when these songs are quite established, some other themes came in, like free marriage, free love, freedom of love, and this condemnation of some injustice, all those things came in. And not long, it just continued about 30 years, then this land form reform, this revolution came, communist revolution came to this area. And then this Japanese occupation came, and they built this, my map is, I don't know where.
Wait, what are you looking for?
Map. Oh. Yeah.
This one?
Not as such a good one. Yeah, this one.
Yeah.
This is Inner Mongolia, basically within China. The north is Outer Mongolia. Then the other one. Yeah, because I didn't make my own map this way. Down.
I don't think we can.
Oh.
No.
It should go down. I tried. Yeah. Northeastern, here.
Okay.
This northeastern area were occupied by Japanese, and they brought in the last emperor of the Manchu to found this. This called Manchuria. At that time, Manchukuo. So they were under Japanese occupation, and then after Japanese occupation, this civil war happened, and people had no idea what is happening. Just one day this Kuomintang come, the other day this communist army come, and just they coming, and they didn't know what was happening. And then after that, in 1947, this Inner Mongolia Autonomous Region was founded. So people thought, oh, this is at last we are settled, and they were really enthusiastic about this new region. Then in the 50s, there was a movement to collect it, collect the oral tradition, all those happened for a short time. But at that time, these songs about heroes were not sure. People were not sure because authorities say this is bandit song. Songs about bandits, so they should be banned. But the intellectuals, newly emerged intellectuals at that time, say, oh, this should be recognized as patriotic or national hero, something like that. Then Cultural Revolution came and banned everything. All these songs about heroes, all those about marriage, everything is old. Love songs are filthy and backward, all those things are banned completely. And after the Cultural Revolution, along with this, all those readdressing all the sufferings in all the area. Many people died during Cultural Revolution, and they were readdressed and given back their honor. All those things happened, and along with this movement, these songs about heroes were recognized as national heroic song. Then I think it was through this some intellectual nationalist appeal, did not come automatically. So at that time, from 1976 to 1990, this is period for this very flourishment of this Hoshin narrative song, because more than other songs, because these hero songs became this weapon to express people's resentment and nationalism, all the things suppressed or suffered during Cultural Revolution, and also other songs as some free expression of their feelings, recovered, revived, and at this time, especially these songs about heroes become longer and longer, and this one song is almost became not officially, of course, this national anthem or for Inner Mongols. This Gata meaning become 500 verses long, and many horses took up their horn and this instrument again and sang, and many people started to learn this instrument. How to play the instrument, sing the songs, and there were conference about this court, the artist part, and also competitions of singing, and the honor, given honor this, to famous singers or something, folk singers, all happened. And for example, someone called Chagambara was become very, very famous and very influential. So I'll talk about it later. The people now singing the songs, almost all, below 60 years old, say they learn these songs from Chagambara, only Chagambara, because his singing was recorded and broadcasted on the radio, and at that time no TV. Everybody listened to radio, and because there's set time for the folk singing, and people just were waiting for this time to listen to radio. This is then from the 1990s. This market economy. In the beginning, along with this, this implementation of market economy policy, opening up everything, started to decline these songs, and people are mostly running after money. Okay. So my field work yes, this is more.
Bit difficult to read.
Mostly three sites in this northeastern area. One is in the anyway. This is one is the left wing banner, Hochstil left wing banner, and we didn't meet any old parts, old parts, no old parts. We met three parts who were. Two of them were in their 50s, and one is in his 40s. So they sang for us, and they can sing the wild storytelling in the proper fashion, but not many, not many. And the ordinary people also sang. They sang with a little bit story. And a very short version of them. And then they, we were told that there is another area in this banner, was called Old Town. It's a land of song. There are many songs you can find there. So we went there, and then we didn't meet, and also we didn't find the old bards, only one in his 60s. He sang some, because he said they have the family tradition. He said his elder brother died not long before. He was really good at singing. He said he was not even half of him. Then no old bards there, and this one is not doing it professionally, but he had this passion. He just came so hurriedly from the field when he heard about us recording, and he was happily performed for us. Then why it was called the Land of Song? Because two reasons. One is the most famous two songs originated from there, this area, this very specific area. And also they have competitions every year, annually. There is one singing competition. But people, we also gathered a group of people who, all of them attended, participated competitions. They are all under 50 years old. And they say they learned these songs from Chagambara again, from radio. So then their singing is not this proper, this narrative song. We are talking about. They just sing some, this always some emblematic verses from one song, just express the main idea of the song. So they sing these few verses, and they told us that people under 30 years old usually sing Chinese pop songs for competition. So, okay. Then, young generation, basically, they told us they don't sing any folk song any longer. And one strange thing, we didn't meet any young people under 20 or 25, because from the age of kindergarten, they go to town, to stay in the town to go to school, and until they finish their middle school, then some of them go to, quite a lot of them go to university, then the others go to work in the town or city to make money. And in the villages, only old people with, sometimes with very small children under kindergarten, and then middle-aged people. Middle-aged people, usually all couples, and so relaxed, and they go everywhere by motorbikes to enjoy themselves, because no responsibility for looking after children there. So easy life. So then the singing usually happens on the occasion of Nasimbair in Mongolian, is called, it's basically the celebration of Nasimbair, is celebration of age. It's basically something, you know, everybody has a year of animal, the 12 animals, and when someone's year of animal come, it's a big celebration. But most this ceremonial celebration is for 61 years, and then 75. But people say 61 is most important because not everybody, you know, not everybody lives above 65, especially in the 61 in the past. Then, on this occasion, because now these people are getting very rich, and they always want to have a big celebration for their parents, the children, and then singers are invited there to sing. This is, I think, the only formal gathering for singing. Otherwise, just not like in the past. In the past, because they are wandering the past, they come to town and are invited to the villages to sing, and in winter, long nights, they sing for several hours like that. Now, TV there, and especially these people are, especially these middle-aged, these idol people, are playing this Chinese mahjong game, gambling. It's terrible. Yeah. So it's more interesting than singing songs, maybe. This is the basic situation of song. Now, this, you can see I don't want to talk much, there's no time there. It's a narrative song, are not narrative songs any longer. It's a narrative and the singing separated. The middle-aged people sing mostly this, a few verses from one song. And then old people tend to tell the story. It's, for them, story is important. Without story, this singing, no sense, you see. Of course, it was, its historical function was like that. And then, this location means they are not folk becoming, tend to become not folk any longer. Because they are broadcasted, recorded, and this also professional singers singing in all style, modern style. And when you Google, the type is one song, but I don't want to talk about this specific song as I planned, because there's no time. This Gadamerin is, as I said, almost became this national anthem during this prospering time. Now, this is something culturally happening in China, especially in Inner Mongolia, is quite different from Xinjiang. It's people are quite free, actually. Free to practice religion or, especially, as long as it is called cultural, it's quite free. And the language use is free, encouraged, the policy. But how can I say, conversely, people are beating them up. They don't care about, you know, language. They are losing their language, don't care about losing their culture. Because for them, there's no use. After so many, going through so many political movements, suffering and uncertainty, someone came and go, and they are, how can I say, they become numb, I think, I sense. And they don't care much about, and especially now, it's peaceful time, no war, and there's chance to make money, have good life there. So they just consider about making money, and also sending their children to a good school, good university. And they are happy to send their children to Chinese school. Because in Mongolia, there are a whole system of education in Mongolia, from kindergarten to university. You can use Mongolian language as your educational language. But no future for them. In business, in government, in everywhere, no use Mongolian language. So if you are not good at Mongolian and Chinese, you are not competitive. So this is happening, you know. So quite, I'm not sure if it was restricted, maybe people are aware of something. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I think we'll talk about this last. What is
you
this?
You didn't, but.
Oh, yeah. I have to say two words
okay.
About this. No, it's not this one. No. No, not that one.
Huh?
Oh, no. yeah, these two. The crucial points, ethnic language, they are giving us. But how to encourage them to learn in their language. There is one example, this I skipped. This, we went to the origin of this whole instrument in the storytelling, which is in Liaoning province actually, but really close to my field of area. And they lost their language, the young generation. Only old people can speak, but there is really this awareness of keeping their things and reviving. And they organize old people to sing. And with all this colorful costume they never use in ordinary life. And singing, I have recording that. And they want us to record, to live for their new generation, young generation, something like that. And they have an education fund, and fully support, financially fully support the children to go to school, Mongolian school, go to university in Mongolian language. That's one such thing. So it's working there. And then they have this singing group, and singing folk songs, also they have this fiddle, and also this religious activities they do. So my just my thought from this field work and thinking, the educational, cultural institutions, local level, the high level always more interested about, you know, this. Keeping also preserving archives and archiving, and also scholars. But this lower level educational cultural, these institutions are very important. And then they can organize activities and get some funding to do things like this the other area. And also these people can mediate this collected material with people. So I also signed a contract with this local university, very local university, to work on their intangible cultural project. So after I talk about my project in the university, so it will be for 3 months every year.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and for persevering with the technological difficulties and alarms and everything else,
yeah.
which you're not to start off this session with.